The Darkness Between Us. Dark Stories from the Uncanny Collective. Episode 18. The Rose Garden by W.S. Gonsalves. Adapted from the story by M.R. James. Part 2.
It was just me at the burial, as we'd planned. No passages or readings or anything like that, just a burial. She was meant to have 5 years, she got 2. 1.5, really. The last 6 months she spent so much time in hospital that it wasn't really living. The house didn't feel like mine. Marguerite's care facility was in London and I felt like I was having to move all over again, only this time alone. We'd redone it together, yes, planned it all together, disagreed about things, given in to each other's choices, but stepping back inside felt like being a guest. At a bed and breakfast or something. There was no dust. Not a speck anywhere. For that matter, everything was so tidy. I don't remember doing much cleaning when we'd moved Marguerite out. But I must have. All the mess must have been deposited in the studio. I'd always been a messy worker, but this was something else. Dust covered everything, canvases and paints all strewn about, papers piled on top of each other at my desk, all chaos. Whatever, it didn't matter. Painting was the last thing I wanted to do right now. It just felt superfluous. What was the point? I looked at all my sketches, drafts, half-started works, and they all just felt useless. My days were filled with taking care of Marguerite's affairs. Moving things out, getting rid of clothes, taking care of stuff. Exhausting fucking work. Throwing away the pieces of the person you lost day in and day out. When I wasn't doing that, I was cleaning and tidying. Something about seeing the house so clean made me anxious to keep it that way. It kept me occupied. I kept wanting to go into the studio and paint, try to vent something, get something down on canvas, but it was too messy in there. I'd find some time to eventually sort it. Later. I'd hear the owls every night as I'd tried to go to sleep. Every time I'd nearly drift off, there'd be a screech and I'd jolt awake. When I did manage to sleep, I'd dream the same dream. The burning papers, the dead roses, being marched through the streets, the fork in the road, the rose in my hand. Sometimes I'd wake up to find my hands bleeding. I'd go to the window to close the curtain, which never seemed fully shut, and I'd see the ruins of the house in the moonlight and the fucking wooden post and where the garden should be, and I'd remember my promise to Marguerite to finish it, and I'd close my eyes and draw the curtain shut firmly, and I'd go back and try to sleep. Charlotte Wilkins popped in more and more. She'd ask how I was doing, in that very polite manner, with that very polite smile. Did she really care? It rubbed me the wrong way. It never felt genuine. I'd just mumble something cliched one day at a time, etc. Then, after she'd done her polite duty, she'd ask about the house. That was all she really cared about. You could see her eyes widen. How was I managing? Was I able to keep on top of things? Were things falling to ruin? Did I find it difficult by myself, all of that? My first instinct was that she wanted the house. It was a beautiful property, especially with the hill at the back, which was unique in all Wellings. She'd always had that jealous eye of Marguerite and I. But the more Charlotte would ask, it was like she was making sure the house was okay. As if it had been through something or needed checking up on regularly, and whatever I said to her, it never seemed quite good enough. She never offered to help. Just stare at me with those pale blue eyes and a smile that just seemed to widen and widen more each time. Days were agonizingly slow, but weeks soared past. Months. I couldn't tell you what I did, how I passed the time. I'd still cook for 2 occasionally, which I hated, throwing the food away in the green bin just outside the kitchen, imagining it festering and rotting, continuing to pile up until I finally emptied it. I'd just stare into it sometimes, down into the rot and decomposition, watch the flies and maggots writhe about until I'd feel sick and want to look away, but wouldn't. Imagining that. Being in the ground. Imagine. I tear myself away, and doing so it always drew my eyes up and out, to the hill, to the garden. And I'd feel that same sickness all over again until I finally retreated back inside. I'd never realised how much I depended on Marguerite socially. We'd go for dinners, to the pub, to people's houses. We'd be with people all the time here. She had a way with village folk, yes, but I got along with everyone. Didn't I? Determined to prove so, and that not everyone in this village was like Charlotte Wilkins, I went to the pub one afternoon. I dressed up, but not too much, and made my way down the road, around the corner, and to the pub. I walked in and was greeted with nothing. There were people inside, neighbours, people we knew. They looked towards me as I opened the doors, saw me, and then returned to their conversations and drinks. I wasn't being willfully ignored. I was just a stranger to them. Someone you pay no mind to, because why would you? I sat by myself with a half pint of ale and just watched from the corner, removed from everyone else. The pub walls were covered in photographs and paintings, as most village pubs are. The village in its infancy, the lands around, all of that. There was one painting high up in the corner of a small building or house that caught my eye. Underneath the painting was a placard, "The Seat of Old Wellings." And beneath that, "Wherein the town rector resides, and he whose judgment made, order upheld, and guidance keepeth our land unspoiled." I sat back and looked around. The pubgoers seemed more like images than people. I'd look down and take a sip of my drink, and I could feel them staring at me. Like those paintings whose eyes follow you wherever you go. Turned to look at them, and they were, of course, never looking back. Just amongst themselves, chatting, drinking. I finished my ale. As I had the last sip, I looked back at the painting of "The Seat of Old Wellings." It was on a hill. Our hill. I thought about the ruins and the old wood. I thought about Marguerite. It was time to go. I could feel their eyes on my back as I left. When I slept that night, the owls were silent, and I dreamt a different dream. I was on the top of the hill, amongst the old wood, the remnants of the house, sitting there, feeling frustrated. I looked down at my hands. They were white, and my nails were. These were Marguerite's hands. I was seeing through her eyes. Turning around, I looked back at the kitchen window and saw myself, washing the dishes and watching me. I gave a smile. I could remember giving it. It felt warm. I, or Marguerite, turned back and looked over the valley and listened. Listened for the voice again, the one I'd heard. I closed my eyes and tried to shut out every other sound around me. A faint sort of scratching, like a rodent in the walls. I leaned in closer to the wood. I heard it. Not scratching, but a voice. Muffled. But I could hear it was hoarse and raspy and angry. So angry. It was a voice, yes, but I couldn't make out the words yet. I had to get closer, just a little closer. I was both remembering and experiencing this for the first time, as Marguerite and as myself. I could feel a familiar, overwhelming anxiety as we leaned in closer to the stubborn, prideful old wooden beam, putting our ear up against it, inhaling slowly and fully to hold our breath, and waited. and it whispered,
There was a crash that woke me violently. I screamed and pulled my legs to my chest and looked to the window. The curtain was drawn shut. I got out of bed slowly and tiptoed over. I held my breath, reaching out to the cord, and I pulled slowly. As the curtains drew away, there were no cracks in the glass, no breaks. I moved and looked closer. There was a sort of residue. In a strange kind of shape. It was the remains from when a bird flies into a window, the feather dust that is shaken off upon impact. They normally leave an imprint of their bodies, but this was just a blob, shapeless and formless. But I looked closer, and the closer I looked, the more shape it took on. It looked like a face. I leaned in even more to see whose face it was. The eyes seemed alive, like they were looking at me, like we were looking at each other. They blinked. I screamed and leapt back, tripping over a side table as the owl's wings beat furiously against the window as it screeched and screeched before flying off into the night.
I caught my breath and looked back. The imprint was gone. I didn't sleep that night. All I could think about were dreams and memories. Promises I'd made. Things we said we'd do. I decided I'd go out to the ruins on the hill and look around. As I walked across the back garden to the hill, the sun was just cresting over the horizon. The whole countryside was bathed in a soft glow. A greyness to the sky. Not cloudy, not bright. The air was still. The world was quiet. Not a peep, in fact. I'd normally paint on days like this. Marguerite would find me tucked away in the studio, careful not to disturb too much. But not today. As I reached the hill and the beam, I was remarked by how pathetic it looked. The way it stuck out diagonally from the ground, stubborn and far too full of pride. It was pathetic. This piece of wood, this remnant of something from before, it was old and rotting, small and misshapen. And what did it ever support? The seat of old Wellings. I laughed. Such a pompous name for what was probably just a magistrate's house. Why were country folk so obsessed with the history of such minor things? I looked out to the fields down the hill, then back at the house. I looked at the ground around me and pictured the roses there. I closed my eyes and breathed in what I imagined they'd smell like. I walked over to the post and put my hands on it. It was cold and wet. I pushed it up and down. I felt the wood shift and loosen in the ground. I grabbed it under my arm and pulled. Out it slid, like nothing. I wasn't expecting the ease of it and tripped, nearly falling over. I dropped the beam and it thudded on the ground, rather pathetically. How did Marguerite and I struggle with this so much? I laughed. We could finally get a move on. I could. I called Mr. Collins and arranged for him to come later in the week. He put up little fuss, which struck me as odd considering what he'd said before. But I paid little mind. After all, it was time to move on. When I slept that night, there were no owls and no dreams. Just silence. The removal was different from Mr. Collins's other appointments. He was quiet and worked quickly and chatted very little. He carried out the pieces at a pace, but was very careful laying them in his van. He'd placed them with a tenderness, almost cradling, in fact. Made sure they wouldn't shift about, then returned to the rest. I paid him, and he gave me some bare rose roots as well. I wanted to start small. I watched him drive off in his van, passing each house down the small street. It was very quiet today. Every house had its curtains or blinds drawn. I went back to the now bare hill, armed with a trowel and the roots, and dug a tiny little spot. I held the roots close to my lips and whispered to them, "For you, Marguerite." As I went down to the small hole I'd dug, there was a spot of colour in the bottom. Some shade of dark pink or a light red. It looked like the cap of a small mushroom, but it was much firmer when I poked it. Using my hands, I cleared away more of the dirt around it and uncovered more pinkish red. Smaller mounds, all together. Some kind of great big fungus in the hill, like those ones in the Amazon. I continued pulling dirt away and its shape became more prominent. It was smooth and flat, wet to the touch like sweat, and there was a warmth to it. It was a nose that I touched initially. And there were cheeks, and an open mouth, and a chin, and a forehead. A mask. A mask of some piggish-looking thing, made with incredible detail. I looked away briefly, distracted by some birds screeching. All the neighbouring houses had their blinds and curtains firmly drawn. Anyone could be peeking through and spying on me. I turned back to the mask. The mouth was grinning. Had it been before? I looked and saw teeth inside. Rotten, old teeth, and only a handful of them. A stench emanated from them that hadn't before. Like bad eggs, or meat, or just rot. I wanted to be sick. There was a heat to it as well. I looked to the eyelids. They opened. They were an icy, pale, sinister blue. I froze. This was in my mind. The eyes are dead. It's dead. It's dead. It's dead. I leaned back, slowly, making to get up and watching the eyes. They were following me. The face suddenly sprung up out of the ground and lunged at me, screeching and yelling like some animal, like some caveman, like some monster. The smell of rotten meat and breath filling my lungs. The eyes were locked onto mine. The pale, inhuman blue piercing into every part of me. It was awake. I had woken it. I'd disturbed its rest. I'd taken its home away. I'd... Marguerite? I don't remember screaming or running away. I just found myself here. In my room, where I've stayed for so, so long. I can't remember how long it's been. I want to leave, but I made a promise to my wife. I still have the rose roots. When I'm feeling brave, I try to look out the window to the hill, only on quiet mornings. But I never do. The owls screech at every hour. The dream is the same every night.
I didn't want to move to the country. It doesn't suit me. I should have told you that.
But I wanted to make you happy. That's all I ever wanted. I hope you were. I'll plant them. I'll plant them. For us. We moved here for peace. For you to be comfortable. And I was so, so happy with you. To have been there with you. To have loved you. I am happy. I'll plant the rose garden. On our hill.
on our land, at the back of our house. No one else's, no one's seat, just ours. And if whatever thing that's out there wants to kill me, then let it. I won't leave. I'll sit amongst the roses with my easel and I'll remember you. Just like we planned.
I'll paint a landscape. I think you'll like it.
The Rose Garden was written by W.S. Consalvis, adapted from the story by M.R. James, and starred Katja Quist. Original music composed by David Denyer. Sound mixed and produced by Connor Allen and Sarah Lynham. Theme music by Nick Samuel. Uncanny Collective are Connor Allen, Steve Fitzgerald, Paul Linghorn, and Sarah Lynham. Please visit uncannycollective.co.uk for information about upcoming shows and events. And to find us on social media, follow the links in the description below.